May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. The trial court's decision dismissing the complaint in this case for failure to state a claim should be reversed. The issue in this case is narrow. A controlling shareholder is entitled to effect a short-form merger under Section 253 if it owns 90% of each outstanding class of stock, quote, entitled to vote on such merger, unquote. Aegis Communications Group had a class of stock outstanding, the Series B preferred stock, that Aegis's controlling stockholder did not own 90% of. The question is, therefore, whether the Series B stock had a right that falls within the meaning of, quote, entitled to vote on such merger, as that phrase is used in Section 253. The issue is significant because it's determinative of whether the common shareholders would be entitled to assert an entire fairness claim in connection with this merger. Now, the Chancellor held that the Series B only had a right to, quote, vote on consent to the merger, but not on the merger itself, unquote, and that distinction matters under Section 253. That was the error in this case. Voting on whether you consent to a merger and voting on the merger itself are the same thing. Under Section 251, the long-form merger statute, the vote on a merger is actually a vote to, in the words of the statute, quote, adopt or reject the merger agreement. There's no legal or factual or logical basis for drawing a distinction between voting on whether to adopt a merger, which is what happens under 251, and voting on whether to consent to a merger, which is the right the trial court held that the Series B stockholders have under their certificate of designation.
If your proposition is correct, why did the certificate use the language that it did when it says no voting rights?
Honestly, I don't know. It's not the most artfully drafted certificate of incorporation. But I think... The easiest way to deal with the problem is to start with the statute, because the question is, if you look at the statutory language, does this right that the Series B has, whatever it is, whether you call it a right to a vote or on a merger or a right to vote on consent to a merger or just an approval and consent right, yes, if it's interpreted the way the defendants ask the court to interpret it, they have no voting rights, but they have a right of approval and consent. And so really, the point I'd like to make here is how the court decides that question, that is exactly what the certificate means, doesn't control this appeal, because there really are two documents to construe, the statute and the certificate. And if you start with the statute, that language, and I'll get into it in a second, is broad enough to cover whatever that right, or encompasses whatever the right is that the Series B has, whether you call it a right to vote or whatever. And really, the statute is pretty simple. It says entitled to vote on such merger. The question is, what does vote mean? Now, it seems a little funny to say, what does vote mean? But it does have different meanings. It can mean the actual technical process of casting a ballot at a meeting. It can also mean the right to approve something, or it can mean permission. Sometimes people say, for directors say, we need to get the vote of the shareholders. What they mean, obviously, is we need to get their approval. And the Chancery Court routinely refers to shareholder approval and voting in the same way. So here,
let's just to try to keep it simple, assume instead of using the word consent, they use the word vote. And that they're synonyms. If we have a charter that says no voting rights, but then in the next sentence it says, however, you can vote on a merger, then what you would say is, notwithstanding the fact you said no voting rights, if it says but you can vote on a merger, clearly you can vote on a merger.
That's right. And it's a very common way of writing corporate documents to have sort of a general statement and then have the exceptions. And that's why basic principles of contract interpretation are that the specific controls over the general. And, I mean, I don't know how many times we've all seen a contract or a certificate or even the DGCL in some places say, here's what you have, provided that, and some other language that's...
So then if we start with that generally accepted proposition, as you say, that you can say no voting rights, but you have voting rights. The question then becomes, if you use the word consent, are they really synonyms?
That's correct. And here, and you've sort of turned to the interpretation of the certificate, Your Honor, and I'd like to make a couple points. If you look at that whole provision where the consent and approval language is, it really, for the most part, it just tracks or copies almost verbatim 242B2, and that's the provision that grants voting rights to classes of stock that cannot be taken away by a certificate. So it doesn't make sense to me that they were in that certificate repeating the voting language of a statute but trying to grant some other right besides voting. I mean, that's why, to me, if you look at the language and where it came from, they're clearly, the intent was, despite the reference to it as something other than voting, it is in effect a voting right. Also, I think if you look at the Series C certificate of designations, that, I think, seals the deal for us, because the Series C certificate of designations, which was in our appendix to our reply brief, has the same language. It has the same approval and consent language. It's a little different in that it only repeats the 242B2 elements of, you know, you have a right to approval and consent on certain things. It didn't include mergers. But for our purposes, it's the same approval and consent right. And then, but it does have a different provision. It has an additional provision at the very end of the Series C certificate of designation on C5 of our reply appendix, where I won't read it, but it refers to the right granted above, the approval and consent right, as a right to vote. I mean, it goes through, they have language in here, every holder of the Series C preferred shall be entitled to that number of votes for each share of Series C, et cetera, et cetera. So really, the Series C designation, which is the most similar to the Series B, specifically refers to this approval and consent right as a voting right. So, you know, in interpreting the contract, the Series C certificate of designations as a contract, to me, it's a right to vote. I mean, it's a little inartfully worded, but it was a right to vote. It's referred to in the Series C certificate of designation as a right to vote. You look at the language of the statute where they took most of it, that was a voting provision. If you look at their filings with the SEC and their filings with the Chancery Court, the company referred to this as a right to vote. I mean, they specifically filed affidavits with the court in a prior case arguing or taking the position that this Series B had the right to vote on mergers. But, you know, again, the point I was hoping to make here was, I think we're right on the contract interpretation, and that should be the end of the appeal. But even if I'm wrong, even if the right that the Series B has is something different from a right to vote, as those words are used in that contract, in the Series C contract, we still don't lose, because the question is, what does vote mean in the statute? And it has to mean, we submit, or it should be given the meaning that the Chancellor assigned to voting, which was, he specifically held that voting shouldn't be defined as just casting a ballot in a meeting. It should be defined as, quote, collective decision-making through communication expressed to accept or reject the proposition, with a proposition carrying if a given percentage off the majority express their consent. That's exactly what the Series B has. Yes, they may not, you know, under the defendant's interpretation, they may not have the right to cast a ballot, the right to cast a ballot at a meeting, but they have the right to express permission through communication. And that should be how the court defines the word vote in the merger, in the short form merger statute. Because really, if you back up to the highest level and say, well, would the legislature have intended to permit a short-form merger in a situation where a shareholder doesn't own 90% of all of the shares whose permission is required to effect a long-form merger? That, to me, seals the deal. That couldn't possibly have been the legislature's intent. They wouldn't have intended to let you do a short-form merger when you cannot do a long-form merger. And let me back up and explain that. Here, let's say the Series B didn't consent. Well, they wouldn't be able to do a long-form merger, but if you affirm the trial court's decision, they meet all the requirements to do a short form merger. So they'd be entitled to do a short form, to effect a short form merger, even though they couldn't effect a long form merger. That's what doesn't make sense in this. That's why the only reasonable reading of these provisions, either way, either in the certificate or in the statute, is that vote is something broader than just casting the ballot at the meeting. Really, the issue is for 253, and I think that's mostly what we're talking about here, is interpreting 253, and that's if you have classes of stock outstanding whose permission is required to effect a merger, you need to own 90% of those classes of stock. Otherwise, that has to be the intent of the short form merger statute. Yes, they use the term vote, the legislature did, versus permission or consent. But in this case, we submit that the use of the word vote is used not in the technical sense, but in the sort of broader sense of permission or, you know, consent or authorization.
And just as a matter of curiosity, your client has a right to appraisal, but apparently prefers a different remedy. If your client prevails, what would be the difference in the remedy?
In all honesty, I don't really envision, and I hope this isn't, you know, if there is a reversal, that I get a chance to reconsider this, but essentially it's the same thing. We're talking about an entire fairness claim where they have to pay a fair price. It would just be to all of the minority shareholders cashed out in the short form merger. That's really what we're seeking.
But I thought that your client has missed his opportunity to seek appraisal.
He has.
So if you don't get a method of bringing an entire fairness claim, your client is stuck with the merger consideration.
Exactly, and that was the trial court's ruling. And so that was the basis of our complaint. They didn't have the right to effect a short-form merger. Therefore, this is an entire fairness case. They have to pay a fair price. They had to pay a fair price. This whole issue wouldn't matter whether there was a right to vote or approval and consent. It's all becomes important because of Glassman versus Unical, you know, that there is no entire fairness claim in connection with a short-form merger.
Well, another way of looking at it is that this all boils down to the fact that your client sat on his rights.
We dispute that, and that at this stage, I would say, Your Honor, that's a factual question.
Intending anything more than just the factual comment that your client has lost, you know, would have had the right to seek appraisal but didn't perfect his appraisal rights. So.
Well, I think there is no question that the minority shareholders could have sought appraisal. But in this case, I don't think there's anything wrong where the shareholders where a merger is being done illegally or in violation of the short-form merger statute in the view of the minority shareholders, for them to say, we're going to pursue that claim versus appraisal.
There's nothing wrong with that.
The fact of the matter is that, appraisal in many circumstances is viable, but in some other circumstances, it's just not economic, you know, it's not the most economically viable alternative, and where there's some other kind of legal claim, like they didn't do the merger in accordance with the statute, that may be preferable for the better legal recourse for the minority shareholders. I cannot honestly say that was the decision making that went into this, how this came about, but we're talking hypothetically, I think, here. But in any case, sorry, Your Honor.
Can we re-explore for a moment your suggestion that we should be focused on the statute, not on the certificate? And the reason I ask that is your client is not an owner of Series B preferred stock. And as you read the certificate's provisions for the rights and privileges of Series B, shouldn't the focus legitimately be on what the expectations would have been of the Series B preferred stock given what they're told in the certificate? And they're told in the certificate that they have no voting rights. Why is that an incorrect emphasis?
Well, they're told they have no voting rights, provided that they have a right of approval and consent. And the question is, what is that approval and consent right? And is that a right that falls within the language of 253? I mean, the question is, under 253, are you entitled to do a short-form merger where there's a class of stock outstanding with these particular attributes?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Save the balance of your time?
I'm into my reply time. I'll save my balance. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Dan Dreisbach from Richards Layton for World Focus and SR Investments. With me at council table, I'd just like to introduce Perry Pappas of the Morrison Cohen firm from New York City.
Welcome.
Your Honor, I'd like to start by just putting in context why we're here. As the Court of Chancery recognized, this is a unique situation. Plaintiff owes not one share of Series B stock. The actual beneficiaries of the certificate of designation of the Series B stock is nowhere to be found in this courtroom. There was only one shareholder of Series B. The company was unable to locate that shareholder for many, many years. It was believed to have been a Swiss company that has long since dissolved and liquidated. Rather, before this court is one common stockholder disgruntled by the merger consideration. Again, did not exercise his appraisal remedy, despite notice of the procedure that was going to be employed by defendants in this case. A 13E3 was sent to all stockholders, common stockholders, in September of this year. The petition to the court was made in October, and the court granted the petition late October, and the merger closed early November of 2006. The plaintiff here seeks to alter both the language of the certificate of designation and also Section 253. He doesn't like the specific words used in either of those documents. Plaintiff told the court in Chancery that the three words that control this case, no voting rights, were of no moment. Today, plaintiff's counsel said that the words of the certificate of designation don't control what happens here. We respectfully disagree. The plaintiff also seeks to alter Section 253, saying the use of the word vote in that statute really means approval, despite what the legislature chose. At bottom,
Can I interrupt? In terms of what the missing preferred B stockholder would have thought its certificate allowed or provided, although it says no voting rights, it also says you have the right to express your view.
Correct.
With respect to a merger, right?
Correct.
And wouldn't you agree that as a practical matter, that is very similar to voting because you get to say yay or nay to the merger?
Well,
you get to consent or not consent. Right?
I agree it's similar in the fact that you can express your approval or non-approval
and
to that transaction.
And that will have repercussions, right? I mean, it's not just I wanted to let you know. It's that if you don't consent, this merger doesn't happen, right?
No question, Justice Berger.
Okay. So that being the case, if you look at Section 253, what you're asking us to say is that a reasonable person or company buying this preferred stock would understand that in a regular 251 merger, they actually get to say whether they're going to agree to it or not, but that in a 253 merger, they've lost that ability because they're not entitled to vote, and therefore the 90% requirement doesn't apply to them.
Your Honor, that is not our position.
Okay.
Our position is that World Focus, that owned 95% of the common stock prior to the merger, was entitled to exercise a short-form merger because it owned that percentage of common stock, which was the only shares of stock entitled to vote. The B shares, nevertheless, had their approval and consent right, which, because the company could not locate the Series B stockholder, was why we petitioned the Court of Chancery for equitable relief, saying that if we publish and try and find them again and the B shareholders does not come forward, the Chancery Court would have deemed their approval and consent to have been given.
Okay, let me stop you there because this may be a significant misapprehension on my part. What you're saying is that if these B stockholders or stockholder had said no to the merger, then even though you own 95% of the stock, World did, that you agree that the merger would have been stopped in its tracks?
Correct, Your Honor. In either a 251 or 253 merger,
okay,
the certificate rights for the B stockholders still, they were entitled to express their consent or approval to any merger. The question.
So the argument made by opposing counsel that, oh, look at the anomaly here, that they would get the right to act with respect to a long-form merger but not a short-form merger, you're saying is not the case, that the consent right would be equally effective as to both forms of merger?
Correct, Your Honor. That is the exact reason why we went to the Court of Chancery in the beginning, to ask the court for that equitable relief.
Gotcha.
We do believe that the certificate of designations does control, because that determines what stockholders are entitled to vote and therefore what ownership is necessary for a majority owner to exercise 253. It's a purely, we believe, a matter of contract interpretation where the court needs to reconcile all provisions and give meaning to all terms of the certificate. The cases from this court and the Court of Chancery tell us that if there is a preference or right granted to a preferred stockholder, that preference or right must be expressly and clearly stated. Preferences and rights will not be presumed or implied. As the Court of Chancery held, there is no ambiguity in the certificate. It's clear, and the literal language says there are no rights to vote. Now, the certificate of designation of the B shares obviously details voting rights, concerns voting rights. There's only one provision in the entire certificate that deals with voting rights, and that's B1, where it says no voting rights. We submit that under the English language, there can be no clearer prohibition against voting rights, as those three words suggest.
If the following sentence said, nevertheless or but you can vote on the merger, you can vote on the merger even if B1 said no voting rights.
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah. That's not here. There is no voting rights except for on a merger.
Well, but that's where we get into the question of whether or not a consent and a vote are synonyms.
Correct.
And even in the Chancellor's opinion, he seemed to suggest you would consent by taking a vote, but voting on whether you consent is distinguishable from voting on the merger.
Correct, Your Honor. And although we would take issue with whether you can vote on a consent, that deals with the mechanism that the B shareholders would utilize to express their consent or approval. There's nothing in the certificate of designations that says in expressing that consent or approval, the B stockholders have a vote on that.
It's one thing if you have a single shareholder to execute a consent, but assuming there were multiple B shareholders, and assume for the purpose of my question so many that it would be easier to vote than circulate something to get an acknowledgement for the consent. Gathering the consent information one way would be by a vote, wouldn't you agree?
Certainly, Your Honor. There are many ways that you could obtain the consent and approval of the B stockholders. If there's only one stockholder, as was in our case, why this is a unique situation, you could do it any number of ways.
Well, then we're down to the question that the Chancellor resolved, and that is, assuming that one manifestation of consent can be accomplished through a vote, even if you can vote on the consent, that's a different right than being able to vote on the merger.
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is that approval and consent can be expressed in a number of different ways. One of those ways is by a vote. And if the company determines it's most practical under the circumstances to ask for a vote of the B stockholders, it certainly can do so, but there's nothing requiring the company to ask for a vote of the B stockholders on their consent and approval right.
So tell us why, in light of the equitable relief you got from the Court of Chancery, this whole litigation is a viable issue anyway.
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor.
Well, I thought part of the relief you wanted was if you couldn't get the Class B shareholders to vote, you wanted, after appropriate advertisement in Europe, for the court to say, we deem that you vote yes. Isn't that correct?
Well, actually, what we asked for was that after publication notice in Europe, that if the B shareholder did not come forward and express his, her, its consent and approval, that the Court of Chancery deem that consent and approval to have been given for the merger.
And that happened, didn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So then don't you, in effect, have them voting for it?
Your Honor, again, we take issue with the synonymous concepts of vote and approval and consent. We think that either if the court deemed the consent to have been given, or if the B shareholder had shown up and said, I give you my approval and consent for this merger to go forward, that is not a vote. It's not counted the way the common stockholders' votes are counted.
But at the end of the day, you get to go forward with a short-term merger anyway, don't you?
Once that approval and consent has been given, correct. Let me see if I have anything else on the we should talk a little bit about how the certificate of designations is arranged. My dear friend on the other side says that B2, which talks about the general prohibition of approval and consent rights, with the exception clause contained in that subsection 2, really deals with voting rights itself. We think he's confusing those concepts. Again, B1 has no exception, no limitation. B2, there is a general prohibition against approval and consent rights. But there's a specific reference back to A6, where A6 gives the right to approve a consent prior to a merger. So to the extent the contract interpretation principle of specific controls over the general, that is true certainly for approval and consent rights in B2. But again, the only language in the certificate dealing with voting rights is contained in B1, and it's plain, simple, no voting rights, which must mean there is no right to vote. With respect to the Series C stock that Mr. Brown mentioned, it is clear from the various certificates of designation issued by the company that the company knows how to provide voting rights to preferred stockholders and how to eliminate those voting rights. Series C does provide voting rights to the Series C stockholders. So we're really comparing apples to oranges, but the Series C stock, when it was in existence, it is no more and wasn't at the time of the merger, would vote on an as-converted basis with the common. By happenstance, there is a reference to A6, which again is different from the A6 in our charter, the Series B certificate, in the same sentence as a provision that provides any other stock having voting rights shall vote together as one class. Well, that confirms that there are series of preferred stock that don't have voting rights. It also carves out the approval and consent rights from the class vote that was entitled to be had by the Series C stock with voting with the common. So we don't think that gives him any leg to stand on. And again, all the other certificates clearly either provide voting rights, which the Series C stock certificate does, or eliminates them completely. Your Honor, we believe that the only way for plaintiff to prevail here in this to be sent back to Chancery is that if you eliminate the three words, no voting rights. What he wants to do is saying, well, that means nothing, but the approval and consent really is a voting right, and they get to vote on this merger.
There's a suggestion in the appellant's brief, pages 6 and 7, that in 2003, both your client, or I should say, both the appellee and the Court of Chancery recognized that the Series B preferred stock had to vote as a separate class, and that an affirmative vote of the Series B preferred stock was required in order for the merger to be effective.
Your Honor,
is that just loose use of the wording, voting, satisfying quorums, affirmative vote?
Your Honor, I think it is. Clearly in the 2003 petition that was filed by Aegis Corporation, not my client's World Focus, but by Aegis, there was a loose reference in there to asking the court for equitable relief to deem the B shares to have voted. That was in the petition. The actual order was more correct in terms of formulation, where it asked that the B shares were deemed to have consented and approved the merger. So that was in artful drafting, as the court found below. And we don't believe that there's any sort of judicial estoppel or anything else. That, and certainly that petition in 2003 cannot amend the actual words of the certificate, which we believe is clear.
No, I understand that. But again, for better or worse, at least as of 11:43, I'm still focused in my mind on what the owner of the Series B preferred stock's expectation would be in light of the language that they believe they were purchasing when they purchased the stock, the rights and the obligations that came with the purchase of the stock. And to the extent this suggests that not only they perhaps, but other people believed that an affirmative vote was necessary, I'm trying to reconcile that in my mind in light of their expectations. And well, wondering how things changed since 2003 to transform it into, oh, there are no voting rights, that's what it says, and despite what we petitioned the Court of Chancery to do, and despite what the Court of Chancery ordered in 2003, using the court's language with regard to the voting of Series B preferred stock, that's not what the case has been, is, or should be. And it's confusing to me.
Your Honor, it's confusing to me as well, a little bit. We don't have a B stockholder in front of us, so what the expectations of a B stockholder would have been, I don't know. I think what we're entitled to do is to look at the literal language of the Series B stock certificate, which has always said no voting rights. Regardless of how it was phrased in the 2003 petition, that should not matter or change the expectations of a holder of a Series B shares.
Remind me, what happened as a result of that petition? Did you ever get the relief that was requested?
The relief was granted, Your Honor, but the merger that was contemplated at that time was a 251 merger, and that merger never went through because financing from my client came in and it was better terms for the company. In the 2006 petition, we certainly informed the court of the 2003 petition, attached all those papers to the 2006 petition, and the stockholders were told in September of this year that of the position of the companies, that there were no voting rights and that another petition to the Court of Chancery would be sought.
So instead of seeking similar equitable relief for the short-term merger, which was an option, you decided to take this different legal position, which is, although we came in a couple of years ago and asked for this equitable relief under 251, we reread the provisions, and we think they don't have a right to vote per se, although they do have the right to consent. But to the extent they have no legal right to vote, we can go forward without them, and that's what you did.
Essentially, Your Honor, although there were different petitioners in 2003, it was the company. In 2006, it was the majority stockholder that did that. As the Court of Chancery found, it was inartfully drafted, and was not and could not have changed the actual intent of the rights of the Series B or the expectations of the parties.
Okay, I'm confused again. Sorry. I thought that that there was a deemed approval or lack of objection on the part of the Series B with respect to this transaction, just as there had been before. Wasn't that process repeated, or am I mistaken?
No, Your Honor, it was repeated in 2006.
Okay. So, for purposes of the 253 merger, the company was able to get the court's approval of the process by which an attempt was made to get consent from the Series B, and it was deemed to have been given.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And the difference between the 2006 and 2003 petitions, in 2003 it was a 251 merger where there wasn't a question of ownership of 90% or more of all the classes entitled to vote. It was just to deem the B shareholders who could not be located to have approved and consented to the merger that was being contemplated at that time.
Well, then, help us understand, if you petitioned in 2006 for this short-term merger, and it's deemed that the Class B consented. What's the issue on appeal here?
The issue on appeal is that the plaintiff believes that the approval and consent language in the Series B certificate provides the B shareholders, who he doesn't represent, with a right to vote on the merger.
Well, and what was the effect of what happened in 2006 if the Court of Chancery deemed them to have voted or consented?
Again, since the only shares of stock that were entitled to vote at the time of the merger was the common stock, there was still an entitlement from the certificate of designation for the B shares to approve a consent to the merger. So even though World Focus owned 95% of the B shares, it still had to get the approval and consent of the, 95% of the common shares. It still had to get the approval and consent of the B shares, which is why we went to the Court of Chancery to get equitable relief.
All right. So let me ask the question in a more straightforward way. What was the equitable relief you got, and why doesn't that equitable relief help you in this appeal?
Your Honor, I think it does help us. The equitable relief we received from the Court of Chancery was that because we were unable to locate the holder of the B shares, owned 29,000 shares of B shares, to effectuate this merger, we needed to have the Court of Chancery deem that approval and consent to have been given. And because that was given, it wasn't a vote, and because World Focus owned 95% of the common, the only voting shares, the 253 merger was effective and valid.
Right. So now I think I understand. What we're talking about in relationship to artful drafting in 2006 is focusing on consent rather than voting. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I guess I would take a little umbrage with the artful drafting because we believe we tracked exactly the language of the Series B certificate of designation.
Right. Well, I wasn't trying to suggest anything in a negative way. It's always important when we're ruling to understand the case. I'm just trying to understand.
Understood,
the case.
Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, at the risk of using up your time, just help me see if so far I'm on track. They're saying you were deemed to have consented. You're saying, even if that's the case, we had a right to vote. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
What we're saying is, it's whatever the right was, consent, we say it's voting, you know. This is all about whether there's an entire fairness claim. It's about whether they were entitled to do – they had enough shares to do a merger one way or another.
Well,
it's just,
just tell me before you go – and we'll give you more time, but just tell me why the equitable relief they received in 2006 doesn't have any effect on your argument.
Because it's – the question is whether that class of stock – had the right to vote or consent or whatever it was. It doesn't matter whether they did vote or not. If they had the right to vote, they didn't. The company did not have the ability, or the controlling shareholder did not have the ability under 253 to do a short form merger. It's not about.
Okay, let me stop you right there to make sure I understand. What you're saying is, forget whether they consented or didn't consent. If they were deemed to have, or if they did have, the right to vote, in quotes, then under 253, in order to perform a short-form merger, the majority stockholder had to have 90% of that stock, that series of stock, as well as 90% or more of the common stock, because they had to have at least 90% of all the voting stock.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Exactly.
Well, it's equally clear to me. So go on with whatever you want to say.
So essentially, it's sort of I know I'm here criticized up and down for trying to represent the interests of the Series B, and I'm not the we're not the Series B. No, We are the common shareholders. We have a contract, which is the certificate. And part of that is the certificate of designations for all the preferred. Part of that is the DGCL, which is all read into it. And the issue is, do the common shareholders did the controlling shareholder have the ability to effect the short-form merger, which is the issue for the common shareholders? We don't really care about the rights of the other shareholders.
Let me stop you right there, because isn't that something that the chancellor made a comment about in terms of what the expectations of the Series B preferred stockholder might be, that why should we infer that the Series B stockholder cared, no offense, but cared about the minority common stockholders, that the Series B stockholder arguably only cared about whatever other preferences the stock had, plus the right to consent or object to a merger for its own purposes, based upon what it viewed the merger value to be worth and so on. But for it to be deemed to have voted would give them an interest, if you will, in protecting all the rest of the stockholders. And why do they care?
Well, it's not the protection, because it's part of the commons expectation, too, because this is all a big contract. You know, it's the certificate and all the designations and the DGCL. And so, you know, it's what the commons expectation is relevant, too, because this is part of their contract, too. And so it's not that anybody feels they're protected by the Series B having a right to vote. It's that if they have the right at all, regardless of whether they're going to line up with a controlling shareholder or not, that the existence of that right protects the common shareholders, because a short-form merger cannot occur.
I understand.
In the chancellor's opinion, on page 10, he cites 8 Delaware Code Section 212B, which, though for an entirely different purpose, appears to distinguish between an entitlement to vote and an express consent to corporate action. Does that statute have any bearing on your interpretation of whether it's required to have 90% ownership or approval of the Series B stock before the short-form merger can go through?
It's not a provision that's helpful to us. I mean, and I'll say that blatantly.
That much I understand. But what I'd like you to do is help me understand why it doesn't have any bearing on the argument today.
Because it's for the same reason that fair value, it's similar to the fair value has a different meaning under 155 than it does under 262, under this court's cases. And in this case, what we're really talking about is what the word vote means in 253. And when you consider how that language got into 253 and what the purpose of 253 is, you know, the word vote in 253, the meaning is clear, even if, you know, voting and approval and consent somewhere else are used in a way that's not synonymous. They are used in a way, our argument is, in a way that is synonymous and has to be for 253.
Okay.
If I'm done. I wanted to address Your Honor's concern that...
Well, you can answer... If you think you've left a question of one of the justices unanswered, answer it, even though you're out of time.
Your Honor, there was this. I said that this is a situation where they could not affect a long-form merger, but could affect a short-form merger. And they said, well, no, we couldn't. We recognize that the Series B had an approval and consent right, and we went and got that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's their clever lawyering here. I mean, that's what they did in this case to protect themselves. But the legal fact is, if they have the right, if they meet the requirements of 253, which they say they do, that right would trump the right of the Series B in its contract. I mean, the DGCL would control. If there's a DGCL section that says you're entitled to do a short-form merger, they wouldn't need. You know, they did run and get the consent or get the deemed consent of the Series B to protect themselves, but technically they didn't need that. And so in the next case, I think you'll find, if this isn't changed, an awful lot of certificates starting to use, you know, approval and consent language and trying to say it's different from voting so that they can get around, you know, legal hurdles in situations.
So it's your position that if the percentage of stock that the controlling stockholder owned, the percentage of common, if that was enough to perform a short-form merger, then if there was any series of preferred stock out there that had a right to consent or object to a merger, that right would be lost?
Yes, because it would be inconsistent with 253. So you'd have – it's just as if the common had a provision in there that said we have the right to vote on mergers. Well, right, but that's trumped by 253, which says – you know, if all these requirements are met, they don't need to get those votes.
Okay.
So that was my point. Thank you, Ron.
Well, then the policy point you're ending with is the implication for this court of saying if you have no voting rights, but you do have this approval and consent, once we start with the premise there are no voting rights, then we're counting the votes differently when we're trying to decide what the percentage is, whether you need a majority or whether you need 90%. And the operative term no voting rights means your stock's out of the equation for the purpose of counting, but to the extent you could veto it, so to speak, through your approval or consent, we still have to deal with you.
I'm not sure I followed Your Honor's question, but I think the answer is yes.
Okay.
We'll clear it up ourselves later. Thank you very much for a very interesting argument. We appreciate your efforts, and we'll recess and take it under advisement.